Tune into Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Psy's glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Psy's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Om Shri Sai Ram and good morning, dear sisters and brothers. Let us please take a moment to visualize ourselves standing with devotees who are right now inching their way ever so gently in perfect silence towards the pure white marble Mahasannidhi, the holiest of shrines that confers blessings on all who approach it. With prayers on their lips and hearts full of devotion, rows of devotees in the Sai Kulwant Hall are still charged with the energy of the Vedam and the Bhajans that have just concluded there. I hope you heard that through the live broadcast that was aired on Radio Sai. On behalf of the entire Radio Sai team, let us begin Morning Glory by offering loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, the heart and soul, the ears and eyes, and the voice of Radio Sai. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and thank you for joining me on Thursday Live, the day dedicated to our Sadguru Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Today is the 28th of September, or is it 29th? I think 29th of September, I beg your pardon, 2016, and the time in the studio is exactly 42 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time, and we are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna, and I'm delighted to have your company on Morning Glory, and I will be hosting this program till 11 a.m. Just a few hours ago, Prashanthi Nilayam woke up to yet another glorious morning, and it feels as though the decades of daily prayers, like the early morning Omkar and Nagar Sankirtan and of course Suprabhatam, and the twice a day Vedam and Bhajans have charged the air of the ashram with heavenly vibrations. That is why as soon as we set foot in the ashram, a feeling of happiness just comes over us. I am pretty sure that this power to confer joy and somehow magically erase our mental burdens has got to do something with the fact that for nearly 66 long years, every single day, without a break, intense congregational prayers have taken place here. You see, the Prashanthi Nilayam Ashram was inaugurated in 1950 on Baba's 25th birthday. Ever since that day, for the past 66 years, a minimum of 3 times a day prayers have taken place here, every single day without a break. If we do a rough calculation, that comes to 24,000 days with 3 intense sessions of prayers held daily. Now that adds up to a grand total of 72,000 sessions of intense prayers, 72,000. And what is more important, each one of those 72,000 prayer sessions had thousands of devotees participating actively. Now add to it the annual Navratri Yagnas, the Atirudrams, the Gayatri Yagnas and other special prayers. And multiply that by the strength of the congregation of devotees present here, which at any point in time in the year runs in thousands. So millions of prayers have been offered here in the name of the Lord. Baba often said that every speck of dust of the holy land of Bharat is sacred, for it is charged with the power of the penance performed by ancient rishis. By the same yardstick, dear sisters and brothers, how much more power is there in the grains of sand here in this ashram called Prashanthi Nilayam, where these many prayers are happening daily for the last 66 years? It really is this power of prayers that has charged the atmosphere of Prashanthi with divine vibrations. So much so that devotees find every leaf, every plant, every tree, every holy idol, be that of Lord Jesus, Lord Buddha, Lord Ganesha, Lord Hanumanji, Gayatri Mata, Everything here feels as though it is alive and breathing. Thoughts manifest into reality effortlessly. There is this amazing synchronicity in the air of Prashanti Nilayam. Not to mention that the Purna Avatar lived, walked and blessed this place with his physical divine presence for decades. That, dear listeners, is the pure and holy power of Prashanti Nilayam, the seat of supreme truth, ultimate beauty and all things auspicious. Excuse me. And luckily for us, along with the heavenly blessings, even the weather here in Prashanti continues to be pleasant with short spells of rain, mostly in the evenings. The current temperature in the Divine Valley is 25 degrees Celsius, with nighttime lows of 22 degrees and daytime highs of 31, which feels quite pleasant thanks to the afternoon cloud cover and the soothing breeze. Meanwhile, wherever you are, dear listeners, here's wishing you, through this live broadcast, a downpour of divine grace straight from Prashanti Nilayam. May your day be filled, or your night be filled with Swami's divine grace and guidance, His protection and blessings. Today on Morning Glory, I have lined up for you a brand new episode of Learning with Love. My guest, Mr. Gopal Rao of Mumbai, is an alumnus of the Sai University, and currently he heads a leading international company involved in the area of personal growth and development. I assure you that you will find a lot of valuable takeaways from this interview with Mr. Gopal Rao, which is coming up in a few minutes from now. But first, let us remember that tomorrow we conclude the period when we honor our ancestors and family members who have moved on to the other side. In fact, tomorrow is the last day of the Pitrupaksh and hence the universal day for offering our respects to those whom we have lost to death. In this connection, I would like to read a few lines from Bhagwan Baba on the subject. He says, and I quote Bhagwan, "A human body is associated with six stages of transformation, birth, growth, change, evolution, death and destruction. Death accepts no excuse. Tears do not move its heart. Death gives advance notice of his arrival to take you, notice in the form of grey hair, falling teeth, falling vision, folding of the skin, etc. Death may call any moment. Every moment, everyone is nearing death. Death is not a deplorable event. It's the journey's end. It is a living death if one is obsessed by pride, ego and anger." Swami goes on to say, "Reduce your wants, minimize desires. When death deprives you of resistance, your kin and kith take off the nose stud in their haste. They may even cut the nose off to retrieve it. If you go on heaping desire upon desire, it will be impossible to depart gladly when the call comes. Do not attach yourself too much to the body or to the things that bring comfort to it. You earn three friends in this life. First, the riches you accumulate, which refuse to come with you when you move out of this life. Second, the kin and kith who accompany your body only up to the burial ground or the cremation ghat. Third, the merit and demerit you have earned, which accompany you to the last. All are beggars at the gate of God. The hero is he who does not beg or cringe or falter or fawn. He knows that the Lord knows best." Unquote. That was a profound reminder. I would like to take this moment to pay homage to Radio Sai's ardent listener, Sister Suhana Patel of Johannesburg, South Africa. Last Thursday, dear sisters and brothers, just before I came on air, she emailed me quickly to say, and I quote her, "Pray you have a blessed Thursday and week ahead. I will miss you on Morning Glory as I am at a conference today, but sure to catch the upload version of your program. Sai love, Suhana Patel." Now, Suhana Patel is an avid Radio Sai listener from Johannesburg, South Africa, and she listens to practically every segment of Thursday Live, and in the past she has participated in every single question that has been posed on Morning Glory, and she got the answer right every time. Last Thursday, she was so thoughtful to even communicate with me and also with my colleague, Prem Anush. She informed him also that she will miss his segment as well, because that is how much she loved Swami and Radio Sai programs. And with deep regret, I inform you all that I understand in the early mornings of Monday, this past Monday, she merged into her beloved Lord Bhagwan Baba. Team Radio Sai prays for Sohana Patel's complete and blissful merger with her Sai Krishna, whom she loved and adored. We also pray for her family members, especially her children, her daughter Veda Patel and her son Rahul Patel, and her husband Ravi. May Bhagwan give them the strength to deal with this profound loss. Rest in peace, dear Sister Sohana Patel. May you always be tuned to the bliss of Sai now that you are with him. Om Sai Ram. I'd first like to dedicate a bhajan to Sohana's memory. This one is for you, Sohana. I hope you and Swami are listening together.
Ekunkar Satnam Karta Purakh Nirpar Nirvair Akal Murti Arjuni Sevam Guru Parsad जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच Thank you.
Vaheguru, Vaheguru, Vaheguru ji bolo. Vaheguru, Vaheguru, Vaheguru ji bolo. Satnam, Satnam, Satnam ji bolo. Satnam, Satnam, Satnam ji bolo.
Nit nit japiye tere naam ji bolo.
Nit nit japiye tere naam ji bolo.
Satnam, Satnam, Satnam ji bolo.
Satnam, Satnam, Satnam ji bolo.
Ram, Ram, Ram.
Sai Ram and welcome back. Dear listeners, next month we have a landmark celebration in the Sai calendar, namely the Avatar Declaration Day. It was in 1940 when a 14-year-old Satyanarayan Raju declared on the 20th of October as to who he really was. He declared his avatarhood to his bewildered parents and thus began his mission of reviving the glory of the Vedas, re-establishing dharma in our hearts, in our homes and society, and protecting those who devoted to him. Out of sheer gratitude for including us in his avataric mission, his devotees all over the globe will be observing this day with much devotion and rededicating ourselves to his teachings. In this connection, many wonderful acts of sacrifice will be undertaken by millions of his followers around the world. For example, in India, a new campaign is beginning. It's called Swachhata Se Divyata Tak, from cleanliness to godliness. This is a nationwide cleanliness drive by the Sri Satya Sai Seva organizations of India, and it begins on 2nd of October and it goes on till the 20th of October 2016. 2nd October, as you may know, happens to be the birthday of the father of our nation, Mahatma Gandhi. October 20th happens to be the Avatar Declaration Day. The Sri Satya Sai Seva Organizations India is embarking on a pan-India cleanliness drive in conjunction with the Indian Prime Minister Sri Narendra Modi's Swachh Bharat campaign. All Balvika students across this country, their parents, their gurus, state presidents, district presidents, conveners, seva dals, 100 Satya Sai schools in India, including the students, staff, parents, trustees, 900 Vidya Jyoti schools that the Satya Sai Seva organization has adopted, men, women, youth, seva dals, all included, 8 lakh volunteers, that is 800,000 volunteers, will work incessantly for 18 days in 20 states of India, and they will be hands-on to clean the country as part of their personal sadhana in response to Bhagwan's call for responsible citizenship. And this is in conjunction with the Indian Prime Minister's call for a Swachh Bharat or a clean India. Now, this is a very big push in the right direction, and all the activities from Kashmir to Bengal to Gujarat to Kanyakumari, all the reports, all the pictures, all the videos will be uploaded on the Satya Sai organization's website. And we hope, we look forward to a cleaner India for after October 20th. I think our sisters and brothers have a very clear step-by-step plan of action how to go about it. It's not going to be a haphazard initiative. It has been very well thought out, and that information has been sent to all stakeholders, all partners, so that in a systematic way we can actually make an impact to clean our country. As I told you, 800,000 volunteers, 8 lakh volunteers for 18 days in 20 states of India, cleaning up India. Now, outside of India, at the international level, I would like to tell you that the Satya Sai International Organization will also celebrate Avatar Declaration Day on the 20th of October with the global service project, which is called Serve the Planet. Satya Sai devotees all over the world will express their gratitude to Bhagwan by participating in various service projects as part of this global initiative, Serve the Planet. This year, for 2016, the theme has been selected by the youth who are leading the projects globally, and that theme is Love for Animals. Bhagwan has always showered animals with divine love, and He has taught us to love and serve animals as our own selves, as an extension of our own being. The Serve the Planet International team has recommended four types of projects to be undertaken to reflect our love for animals. They recommended activities focused on serving animals, and these include Global Initiative 2016 Love for Animals includes service activities at animal shelters and sanctuaries, Walk for Values, distribution of human values quotations to promote greater awareness of love for animals, human values classes and creative workshops for children to emphasize the importance of kindness and compassion for animals, public talks to promote greater self-awareness of vegetarian food, non-violence and respect for animals. Isn't that wonderful? And also, I'm so happy, personally so pleased to inform you that on Avatar Declaration Day, 20th of October, for the second year in a row, Daughters of Sai will be converging at Prashanthi Nilayam. Now, Daughters of Sai are the alumni of Satya Sai School in Prashanthi Nilayam and the Anantapur College of the Anantapur campus of the Satya Sai University. All the alumni, women alumni, will be coming, the homecoming on 19th of October, because on 20th there is a very nice program of like an alumni reunion meet happening in Prashanthi Nilayam. This is the second year that this tradition is going to take place. So there is an arrival and meet and greet dinner on the night evening of October 19th, and on October 20th the morning and evening bhajan mandir program will be conducted by the Daughters of Sai, who are the alumni of Swami's school in Prashanthi Nilayam as well as the Anantapur campus of the Sai University. Apart from the Mandir program, there will be workshops and inspiring and interactive sessions throughout the day. A lot of sibling bonding will take place at the lotus feet of Mother Sai, and it's a joyful opportunity to converge at the lotus feet of our Divine Chancellor, our Sadguru, and relive the joy of the years we have spent in His care. The Daughters of Sai are coming in large numbers from all over India as well as abroad to bond as sisters and pay homage to beloved Bhagwan and return home with loads of blessings. With all those updates, dear sisters and brothers, it is now my pleasure to play for you the Learning with Love interview with Mr. Gopal Rao of Mumbai. Have a listen, please. Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to Learning with Love. My guest today is Mr. Gopal Rao, a Sai University alumnus who is the Managing Director of Landmark Worldwide's India Operations. His work involves leading groups and individuals to achieve breakthroughs in such critical areas of life as productivity, communication, handling challenges, and relationships. Prior to this line of work, Mr. Gopal Rao worked for a multinational pharmaceutical giant as a group product manager. He holds a bachelor's degree in pharmacy from the Mumbai University and an MBA from the Sai University in Prashanthi Nilayam, from where he graduated in the year 1990. His family first came into the Sai fold well before he was born. In 1956, when Bhagwan visited Coorg in Karnataka, his mother was drawn to his divinity. Growing up, Mr. Gopal Rao completed the Balvikas program, and currently he participates in training and development activities at various Sai Samitis. With that introduction, I am delighted to welcome him to Radio Sai. Sairam, Brother Gopal, and thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Learning with Love.
Sairam to everyone. Thank you for inviting me here.
It's a pleasure to have you. So, 200,000 people have been impacted by this program. I'm assuming it's motivational, it's self-empowerment, and you're leading this operations in India.
Yes.
How much of the Satya Sai student is part of the success?
Just like the spine in our body is critical for holding all of what my physical constituents together, I think I attribute my association with Bhagwan, right from my childhood, right from a family experience, to be critical in my search for what impacts the quality of one's life, and to have it be available on a day-to-day basis rather than having it be conceptual, have it be something like theoretical, something which is different from day-to-day life. So I have the privilege of the experience that I do my day-to-day job is living Vedanta and getting paid a salary for it, which I think very few people have the opportunity.
It's a win-win situation, yes. What can I say?
That's
sounds
right.
Like one. Uh-huh. And throughout your time with Swami, you know, your family, 1956, Swami must have been how old at that time, 30 years old?
Just something like that, yeah.
Yes. So you've known Bhagwan since he was, at the time when he was 30 years old. I bet you were not born at that time.
That's right.
And so you sort of grew up in an environment of Sai awareness. What are some of the lessons you have picked along the way that you can share with us?
Yeah, so as a Balvika student, then being part of a study group, study circle in Mumbai, my exposure to Bhagwan was all through books and through Swami's visits to Bombay. But the real opportunity came when I got an interview in 1986 as part of a study group. And from that time, I resolved that I must come here and study. And then in 1988, I came here after my pharmacy degree, got admission in the third batch of MBA. So first lesson I want to share with all our listeners is, Swami used to give an interview to us almost every Sunday. So I would say most of my management lessons, MBA lessons, happened at Swami's feet in the interview room. And one of the things I can never forget is his statement called, management is man management. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way Swami puts it is so simply, but when I finished my MBA and went into industry, it was not man management. Over there, it was knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. The more you were exposed to Harvard Business Reviews, all those journals, management journals, the top management's depth of knowledge, that seemed to hold the space and or have power. Mm-hmm. But in the last 20-25 years, it has shifted. Knowledge is no longer power. Even an ordinary junior most worker has access to internet. There is no more knowledge.
It's not an exclusive
club. It's not exclusive club anymore. And what is critical for success is your ability to manage people, your ability to handle relationships. And if you do not know how to manage people, you can't be successful. Just can't be successful. Whether it's, you know, if you look, life does not affect you. When I say life, I mean situations, circumstances, other people don't affect you. For example, if there's a death in a family, four people of the family members have four different reactions. One is devastated. Another one is very sad that he has lost a dear family member. Third person is very indifferent. Like, if he was alive or dead, what difference it makes? And the fourth is thrilled that the property is now come to him. So, circumstances and situations don't make any impact on us. It is our relationship to the circumstances that shapes our life. And one of the critical elements of our lives is, like Swami says, we don't live in isolation. We are an integral part of society. Every aspect of our life is with other human beings. And if you are not a master in managing your relationship with people, you cannot master life. So that was one of the critical lessons that I got, and I actually saw it unfolding in front of my eyes over the last 20-25 years. And I think today's most effective, successful managers are people who have learned how to manage people.
And you've learned it from Swami himself.
I learned from Swami himself.
And Swami was such a great manager himself.
Unbelievable. I mean, if you take away all this divinity and all that, yeah, spiritual aura away from Swami, if you just look at him as purely from his statement called "My life is my message," as a leader, as a human being who was a leader, there were incredible ways of being and acting of Bhagwan that are timeless messages, timeless opportunities to pick up and learn and master. I want to share another one,
please,
which is how Swami demonstrated that everything is sacred. The devil is in the details, God is in the details. In other words, if you mess up with small things, you will eventually have a disaster. And if you pay attention to the smallest things, everything turns out to be great. And I want to share two examples. This was during Dasara, and Swami in Narayan Seva used to go and give clothes to the poor people in the Hillview Stadium. So lots of saris had come in, and these saris, when they come from the factories, are folded in a certain manner, which is not easy for students to carry.
Mm.
So Swami took us to Purnachandra Hall in the green room and told us to repack the saris. And the way he demonstrated, he unfolded a sari and then refolded it. But this time it was folded in a lengthwise long fashion. So he showed, this is how you can carry with both your arms, number of saris, and walk behind me, and as I give it to people. So he told refold everything, and we were about a bunch of 7-8 students doing it. And Swami went away somewhere. He comes back after half an hour, and he walks up to me and says, what are you doing? I said, Swami, I'm folding the saris the way you showed. Then he turns and points to the jute bag that I had thrown in the corner. He said, what about that? You didn't fold that.
Hmm.
And suddenly it struck me that...
Attention to detail.
Attention to details. And I also remember once in the mandir, he asked me to distribute prasadam, which was some kind of mithai. And as I gave everybody, the carton got over. I told Swami, it's over now. He said, did you take one for yourself? I said, no, Swami. So Swami picked one, well, there was still one lying, or a couple of few sweets lying. He picked it up and gave it to me in my hand. And instantly I took it and put it in my shirt pocket. Swami had half turned, he turns back and says, no, don't put it in your shirt pocket. It's oily. It'll stain your shirt pocket.
Mm.
And I did a play which Swami directed. And I was one of the teachers in that play.
Was it for convocation?
No, it was one of just a play.
Mandir play.
No, not mandir play. It was in the college.
College.
For what occasion, I don't remember now. And Swami wanted me, I remember he came to see the rehearsals. And in one scene, I had to pick up a teacup and sip tea as the student is talking. And Swami yells, not like he yells, but whatever he says loudly from his chair. There is nothing inside that cup. It's so easy to make out. Put at least water in it. Otherwise, it's so fake.
So your acting was so fake otherwise.
Ah, yeah, I know. So it's that kind of things that you used to watch out for, which is just incredible. I mean, it's a way, you know, more than the authenticity, finesse in acting. For me, it was a wake-up call called what we are trying to portray. It's not real in the play.
Everything so detailed.
Yeah, and I had a lot of one-to-one those, but they're all very personal in terms of family and things like that. It's amazing, those kind of experiences.
Oh, I bet they must have been. I can only imagine.
So there are, I could
you
give...
You know what they say? They said that doing trifles well is perfection, but perfection is no trifle.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly. And even when we study great master's life, I was studying Raman Maharishi's life. It is said that when he used to eat his food on his banana leaf plate, at the end of the eating, his plate would be so clean that it was impossible to believe that somebody had eaten food. People have seen him binding books.
Yes.
And the way he used to bind books was as if his life depended on it.
Yes.
And this is, by the way, in my company, we pay a lot of attention to details. And for us, attention to details is critical for our search for excellence, our search for causing excellence in whatever we do. For no reason except that that's our standard. And paying attention to details, either you pay attention or you don't pay. One will give you extraordinary results, one will give you none. And if you notice, to pay attention to details requires a high level of awareness, presence. You can't be distracted. So a lot of my own development happened in just focusing on details and how casual I am, how sloppy I am in so many places. And if you look at the aspect of divinity, which is, he pervades, the definition of divinity is omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent. That is, there's no substance on this universe or multiverse or whatever you call it, which is devoid of divinity. If that is what you consider divine, then there's no element on the planet which deserves anything less than your full attention.
Full attention, exactly. You have to be in the moment at all times, not drift away. And, you know, we're raising this generation of children who are so distracted. Attention deficit disorder is the order of the day. And if you bring back these teachings that you've learned in Swami's lotus feet, it just changes the paradigm completely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, I think every devotee of Bhagwan or student of Bhagwan has heard umpteen stories of how sharp Swami was, how alert he was, and how intently focused he was. And I don't know whether it's for him, but definitely for us.
Yes.
That was a lesson, a training that he demonstrated every moment. You know, I remember in Kodaikanal once, he asked me to serve sambar to the devotee sitting
mm-hmm.
while he was having his lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And as people know about Swami, he finished his lunch in 2 minutes. Before
he would hardly peck at the food.
Hardly, yeah, that's right. And by the time I served the first person and I now reached the second person to serve, I suddenly found Swami pouncing on me and saying, no, this is not the way you serve. He took the bucket of sambar from my hand, took the ladle, and he mixed the whole thing again. He said, every time you need to mix it. Because if you don't mix it, the first few will get only the watery gravy, and the last few will get all heavy vegetables. So, you know, his attention to those kind of things is unbelievable. Once in Kodai, he distributed money for all of us to go horse riding. And he told a couple of us, including me, you should not go horse riding. You're so heavy. The horse, all the four legs will get spread out this way. And 2 weeks later, we went for horse riding. And when we come back, he remembered. He said, I told you all that you both should not do horse riding. Did you all do horse riding? I said, no, Swami, I didn't do it. He said, good, good. Anyway, I know that already. And he said, I know because I was watching from the balcony. That's great.
That's so great.
Yeah.
So I understand you, when you were doing your MBA, your batch was really looking forward to your industrial tour, which is part of your second MBA.
Yes.
But in your case, it got cancelled, much to your disappointment.
That's right.
What happened then?
Well, the truth is, all of us, I mean, I'm saying generalizing it, but people come to get educated, not to learn something, but as a means to earning something.
Yes.
So I came from Bombay with looking for an MBA.
Financial capital of India with stars, yeah, dollar signs in your
right.
eyes.
And the whole attempt was get your degree fast, go and earn a good, earn well in some good job. Nobody's interested in learning anything. And so when in the vacation, summer vacation between the first and second year, the project was cancelled. And Swami said, you will not go to companies and do projects. I was devastated because that's a very critical element in the selection process when you go for jobs.
Mm.
They want to know what independently projects you have done. And we were very upset. And there were lots of interaction between students and the faculty. And we were arguing why was it cancelled. And they said, no, Swami doesn't want you all to go and mix with people. And all that seemed very, very upsetting for me.
How old were you then?
I was 22. And then Swami, and I think Swami got to know of that, and to soothe our upset, he announced that he will take all of us to Chennai and we will be visiting various industries and learning in that industrial 2 weeks trip or 1 week trip, I don't remember now. And we'll learn from observing and interacting with industry champions. And we went to Chennai. Most of us were living in the guest house of Mr. Srinivasan. And a few stayed in Sundaram. And every morning we would go for breakfast to Sundaram. Then go out into the various companies, L&T, HMT and all that. And then come back and then spend the evening with Swami. And then Swami announced on the last day he's going to meet all the heads of the companies where we visited as a token of gratitude, an opportunity to meet him, and he will give a discourse. And like many teenage children who get very embarrassed about our parents, the way they dress and the way they talk, I was very, very embarrassed. I said, oh my God, this suit, boot, penke log aayenge, this big champions of industry will come.
Corporate head honchos,
and they will sit and Swami will talk about bhakti and spirituality and Rama and Krishna. And I was a little embarrassed that, you know, how will my Swami occur to these people? And I remember that evening in Chennai, I was constantly looking at these suited, booted people who came. Swami gave, I think, a 40-minute talk on management. And what he spoke was unbelievable.
Mm.
I saw people sitting on the edge of the chairs, leaning forward. And the end of the talk or discourse, all of them rushed to Swami. They surrounded him. There was no selfies craze those days. But they were posing for photographs, asking for autographs. You know, I was like worried that they'll trample him. Swami is so small and high. It was unbelievable. I was never so much as proud of Swami as ever. You know, Swami was a master of being appropriate. Whether it was a poor villager or the biggest head of state or an industrialist, he knew how to be appropriate, which matches the level at which those people are.
And the occasion. Always.
Yeah, and no discrimination. It was just himself, naturally. And I think those are very critical lessons if you are interested in leadership, how you deal with people who are junior to you and the people you report to, and have no discrimination and no difference between them except being appropriate to the occasion and the situation, says a lot about who we are. And the only unfortunate part for me about learning here is Swami didn't give me the intelligence to grasp the lessons immediately. It took me many years of failing and struggling and then observing and then reluctantly agreeing that was the message given to me long time ago. So I just wish all the listeners and people who will come in the future to this institute that they don't take the low road the way I took the low road to get these lessons in my life.
I guess sometimes we just have to go through the school of hard knocks.
I know, maybe.
Yeah, that's each one's journey.
Each one's journey, that's
right. I mean, as a parent, I may tell many things to my children and just, it may only end up annoying them.
That's right.
But they'll draw the same conclusion based on their own experience.
Right. Hmm.
I guess so. Now, you also had the great fortune during your, you've hardly stayed here 2 years, right?
Yes.
1988 you graduated. So
88 to 90.
1988 to 90. In those 2 years, you even went to Kodai and Ooty.
Yes.
Tell us, what did you gather there? What lessons Swami imparted?
Now, you know, the people, I often hear about, we often hear that Swami gives a very long rope and it's easy to get fooled around him. In Puttaparthi, Swami is like a regal king, you know, distant, very, very dignified, and a huge aura. The moment he took us to Vrindavan, in fact, when I went to Vrindavan, Thrai Vrindavan, he caught my hand and took me around Thrai Vrindavan, telling me all about the doors and the carvings and the Ganpati statue, and he explained the whole background. It was like a friend, very close, like a family member. Like most people have experienced how he is in the interview room. Vrindavan was that kind of experience. Kodai is dangerous because Swami is so close to you. We experienced Swami wearing goggles, wearing a hat, eating with us, traveling in the bus with us, joking, pointing out sceneries, in the forest of Mudumalai, talking to us about the elephants. I couldn't believe I'm sitting next to Swami, interacting with him, sometimes rubbing shoulders with him. Sometimes walking up the slopes in Kodai, he would hold our hands and we would support him as he walked over the rocky terrain. It's easy to forget who you are with. And I think it's just a blessing at one level, you know, an experience of being blessed. And there is a lot of aura around being going to Kodai with Swami. A lot of students crave to be that. And I think it's fully justified. It is an unbelievable experience that you have to live and then experience it.
And also a lesson in handling Maya.
That's right. You know, those days I used to sit next to Swami's chair and massage his feet right up to his knees. And Swami's calves are very soft. And as I used to massage that, I used to wonder, where is the strength in his legs? Till somebody once told me, do you know the lion's hands, arms are also soft, but there's a huge amount of power in them. And every day I used to massage, morning, evening, massage for 2-3 hours. One day I got really tired. I said, kya yaar, roj, I got tired of it. And that day itself, Swami turned to me and said, you are close to me now. Don't miss the opportunity. A day will come when you'll be very, very far away. And just to see me like a small flame, that itself will be a huge privilege. So enjoy while you're here the opportunity. So that day I had not massaged his feet. Next day again I started again. As I realized, you know, somewhere he read my thoughts or what. And now, you know, after I passed out, and then a time did come where I had to see, I had to be satisfied by seeing Swami once a year, once in 2 years, seeing him from a distance, so far away, and can't believe that I used to be with him and eat food with him and travel in the same vehicle. And so it's, I think, just an experience of blessing, and I take it more than blessings, a responsibility to transmit and give it and share this with others about what our experience of with this divine being was, and so that future generations can know that such a phenomenon was available to us.
And walk this earth.
Walk this earth. There's one more beautiful anecdote I want to share, which very few people know. what happened in Chennai was, he walked up to me during breakfast and said, "You are a pharmacist, isn't it?" I said, "Yes." "So you're like a doctor," he said. I said, "Okay." He said, "My family members are not well, so you travel in the car with them." So I sat in the white Mercedes. Swami was in the red Mercedes. I sat in the white Mercedes with some of his nephews and one of them was Sri Ratnakar and Swami's grandson. And I was not very happy because all my classmates were in the bus and I knew in the bus they'll have fun and they'll be singing bhajans. And so I was very, very unhappy with Swami's selection of me to sit. And as it is, I don't think I'm a doctor. But Swami said, "No, it's okay. You'll be with them. They're not well. You take care of them if they don't feel okay." So then we left from Chennai to drive down to Bangalore to Whitefield. And at some point, the bus went ahead and Swami's car took a detour and turned into some narrow road and our white Mercedes followed his car. In about half an hour to 45 minutes, we reached some deep section of a forest. And over there, I saw a bunch of villagers or maybe tribals, maybe 10, 15, that made a small altar of twigs and branches. And Swami's picture was there and they were singing bhajans. And in that, you know, fading sunlight, twilight kind of effect, Swami got out from his car and he stood there. And these tribals were singing. And I got off of my car. I said, "My God, if this was a pre-planned visit, there would have been thousands of people."
Yes. And there were no cell phones, no mode of communication
nothing,
to inform them.
No mode of communication. And if this was not pre-planned, it was on the spur of the moment. How did the tribals and Swami know that this meeting is happening? It still doesn't fit my understanding. And Swami stood there for two or three bhajans and then they did the Maharati. It was a surreal experience for me, standing there watching just 10, 15 tribals singing bhajans on a makeshift altar, Swami's picture, and Swami standing there royal, regal.
In person.
And nobody rushing at him, nothing, and they are singing and they did aarti to him. He blessed them and got back in the car and said, "This is why he put me in this car."
So
not
it was
to take
an
care.
Unscheduled digression, right? Diversion.
I have no idea. No understanding. Nobody knows. I spoke to Ratnakar and I spoke to others and I said, "Do you know?" They said, "No, we don't know anything about this." And I said, "Maybe that's why he put me in this car."
Well, it tells you heart to heart. Swami reads, knows our heart.
And his family members are fine. They didn't need any kind of assistance.
He gave you a privilege, basically.
And I was like stunned with that opportunity to see something which probably it will only be in imagination or dreams, you know.
So if I may take the liberty of just summing up, whatever happens, happens for the good, right?
Unbelievable. I think, you know,
the fact that you were sent to that car, there was always a bigger good that was waiting you.
That's right. So one of the things I've learned is with Swami is, I never chose to get attracted to Swami. I can't say I got attracted to Swami. God knows how it happened. I never had any intention or plan. I saw him once in Shanmugananda Hall for the first time.
In Mumbai.
He had come with a group of students who were performing Bhajagovindam, the musical play. And I was so blown away by seeing Swami. I just fell in love with him and the journey started like that. I didn't select it. I didn't choose it. It was not my intention, not my plan. So I left it to him that he decides. So I don't worry about where I'm going or where he'll take me or will any of this spiritual journey is not in my hands. So I left it to that. So I'm really, really just only keep reminding myself to stay in gratitude and express gratitude for what I got.
Now, Brother Gopal, obviously there were so many pluses in this experience of being with Swami and you had like really two very powerful years with him.
Yes.
People might have, for example, yours truly, I've been here with Swami, student for 6 years, but never had a single experience which is comparable to what you have had.
Right, yes.
So, within 2 years, Swami gave you so many lessons, so many opportunities to watch him, observe him and learn from him. How did you translate some of those things into pluses in your life to make you who you are today and to be where you are today?
So the lesson that I shared, man management,
right,
attention to details, Swami used to emphasize a lot on action, you know. He used to say, "Listen, I don't really care about what your intention is, but in your actions, if you are not demonstrating being good, what's the use?" And I used to have Professor Nanjinda used to keep asking me after every term, after every semester, how did you perform? And in one subject, I didn't do very well. He said, no, you have to perform. Swami, discuss with me. He is very disappointed. And I said, God, wow. He keeps saying, I provide love of 100 mothers. This is really like that. He is paying attention. Out of thousands of students, he's looking at our marks. So, the experience was, he cares. And for me, a true leader is somebody who cares. So, every moment that I spend, it's exaggeration, but I think the time I spent here, a lot was unseen, but it paved a huge
dividend, I guess.
Absolutely. You know, life was tough here. Food was not very good in the hostel at some point. Swami came and had organized 2-3 feasts, and then he said, I'm taking care, I've heard food is not good. Early morning you wake up, you have to participate in sports, extracurricular activities, enormous amount of studies, go for darshan.
Packed schedule.
Doesn't
that help you to get through your day today?
And you know, all those are preparation years. Life outside, I have now found out there's no such thing called easy road to success. It could be easy, but if you're not prepared to work hard and put in whatever it requires to succeed, you can't. And I think the life in Parthi prepares you for it in a very, very subtle manner, in an unseen manner. And in Parthi, you have the experience of all kinds of people. There are loving people, there are very caring people, there are highly sensitive people, highly emotional people, there are some who are tough, who are harsh, who are difficult to deal with, who don't seem to understand. I think in all this is just a reflection of what you deal with in life. And as a student, it's the right time to get that kind of intervention, that kind of exposure, that kind of training. Especially in this environment where you feel safe, you feel you have this experience of being in a spiritual and in presence of divinity. It has a very subtle way of training us. It's not harsh or bad or, you know, like military school, but I think it prepares you very, very well. And I always assert, organizations, companies, institutions, even the nation is hungry for solid people, people who are reliable, people who can be trusted, people who are authentic. And that's a shortage in the world. And if people can show up like that and be like that, they're trustworthy, they're solid, they're reliable, they're authentic. The world is hungry for that. And I think studying here in this institute, my experience was, it trained me like that.
I hear you. Makes absolute sense.
The other, like I said, about the world wants solid people. And the whole world is driven towards image and getting admiration and seeking praise. And it's a big, big problem. And one of the things, if you notice what we get in this university, is a lot of attention to building stuff, building substance, and being solid. You know, the exposure to Indian culture, the traditions, the spirituality, appreciation for all religions, the essence and the message of all of the essence of humanity, the values, the five values, and the Swami's emphasis on education and the value-based education. I don't think anyone can go through this education and if they do it authentically can come out being flaky. There is a solidity, there is a depth that one can rely on, and of course, you know, the choices for every human being. You may go through a great environment and yet choose not to be developed. You can do that, but you do have the environment given here to really be solid, and that's what the world wants. Image, admiration, praise is very fleeting. It doesn't carry the day. You may impress some people for some time, but eventually in the long run, to deliver on results and to make the difference that makes a real difference takes something from people. And I think this university does contribute to a very large manner. And you know, when Swami's physical presence was here, it was incredible. I mean, very difficult to find any flaw in anything that we were exposed to.
Now, I was reading the tagline on your email, and it says, live life powerfully and live the life you love.
Yes.
Are you living powerfully?
Absolutely. On 17 November 2003 or 4, I'm not sure, I was sitting in the Mandir portico. There was my birthday, and suddenly Swami's chair, I mean, Swami used to be on the motorized chair, came to the far end of the Mandir, and somebody said, he's not come this side for a long time. And I said, wow, today is my birthday, and he's come here, and his chair stopped just 6 inches away from me. And he took a letter from one of the ex-students or former students, and he was reading it, and he took 10 minutes to read. He was just there. And all I had to do was kneel up, and I wanted to tell Swami, thank you, I have an extraordinary life. And I don't know what happened, I'm normally never speechless. I was just frozen, staring at his face, and no words came out of my mouth. Maybe Swami didn't want to hear it, maybe Swami already got the message. I have an extraordinary life. I live a life very which is very powerful. I'm very, very fulfilled. I don't look forward to reaching anything in life anywhere. I think my life is completely fulfilled. I can die tomorrow. I can die today, and I'm happy. There's nothing that I seek, like it's still missing. Or only thing I seek is the opportunity to keep serving and making a difference, and then pop off to the crematorium. That's all that I want. Then there were a lot of family experiences. I remember once when we were in the interview room, and my father had come, and Swami had told me to call him for the interview. And he asked my dad, after giving him a Shivlinga, he asked him, what do you want? And to my shock, my father said, when I die, I want to die without being in the hospital with all these rubber tubes and all these wires. I want to die peacefully. And Swami said, yeah, you'll have it. Mm-hmm. And then we posed for a photograph, and as we stood for the photograph, Swami said to my dad, who was wearing a white shirt and a white dhoti, see, you don't stand there, you stand here. He moved my dad away from the door, and he said, see, the door is white, your clothes are white, you need to have a contrast in the background. Then he turns to himself and says, but I, with this orange dress, I can stand anywhere. I will stand out. So, that kind of, see, for us, it's a once in a lifetime. But for Swami, it is a regular affair. He is posing for thousands of pictures. Maybe I think he was one of the most photographed persons I ever saw. But for him, it mattered. That photograph we would keep. Yeah. And
with the background.
For him, he wanted it to be extraordinary.
But may I ask, how was your father's end?
My dad went around 2-3 days before he died to telling everyone, Mera passport to pehle se tha, abhi visa bhi aa gaya. And people thought he's talking about
going abroad
because my brother lived in Malta. And then the day he passed away, I was in Darjeeling. So he called my wife and said, tell Gopal, I got that he loves me. He's given me this Pankaj Malik music set. That's his way of expressing his love. But tell him I got it. And then he told my wife, don't worry, when I die, I won't die on the bed. Because 6 months earlier, his mother had died. And as per some tradition, we had dismantled the bed on which she had died. They said, I will not die on a bed, otherwise all the beds in this house will go. And around 6:30 in the evening, he told my mother, just help me off the bed. He took some vibhuti and asked for water. He laid on the floor, and then he was gone. It was a peaceful exit. He knew how he was dying. And my father is not heavily into spirituality and all that stuff, you know. But what Swami promised, he delivered. Such a peaceful death. Just got off the bed, sat on the floor.
We all dream of going.
I know,
like
something
that.
Like that. Yeah.
Wonderful.
There were things like my sister's marriage, you know, he had predicted, don't worry, this is how it will happen, and all those things happen. One of the beautiful things was when my mother and sister got an interview, as they walked into the interview room, Swami told my mother, I know you have one more son, he's in America. And my mother said, no, Swami, he's in Amsterdam, Holland. He said, no, America. My mother said, no, Swami, he's in Holland. He said, no, I know, he's in America. 3 times she argued with him, and 3 times she said, my brother eventually ended up in America only. And even though he wanted to leave, he's now a citizen of America. So it's very funny. 10-15 years prior, those kind of small incidents that...
You can see through time, right?
And there's one, during the Dasera holidays, I had gone back to Bombay to be with my family, and my father got a heart attack. And he was in the hospital, in the intensive care. And then my date for rejoining the college had come. So I left him and came back here because I didn't want to be late. And those days there were no phones, no cell phones. Very few people had landlines at home. We didn't have a landline. So once I came here, after about a week, I started worrying. What's happening to my dad? No news. And I remember early morning at around 5 in the morning, I got a dream where I saw that he died. And somebody had told me early morning dreams always come true. And that was a Saturday. We didn't have college. I don't know why. But I got ready and came to darshan, for darshan. And as Swami walked past me, he just walked past me and then stopped after a few steps. Turned around and asked me, Bombay se message aaya? I said, no Swami, no message. He said, don't worry, he's safe.
What a reassurance.
Yeah, absolutely. And next, 2 days later,
imagine
my dad's letter came.
Imagine to take care of a student's dream, the fears based on a dream.
Yeah.
And obviously it was coming from your subconscious mind because you
were
so worried.
Even when I sent him a message, a telegram saying my dad's got a heart attack, when I came to Parthi, in the mandir, he came, sought me out and said, don't worry, it's not heart, it's some gas problem. Uh-huh. So, you know, of course, doctors diagnose as a heart attack and he's saying this way, but at least in my mind now there's a duality now.
Yeah.
Sachi heart attack hai, ya something else.
Yeah.
So that fear and that stress and
yes,
that projection in my head called, now he's got a heart attack, he's going to go deteriorate, it's gone.
Yeah. Always very reassuring.
Something, yeah.
Very
caring, you know. When he said, I provide love of 100 mothers, it was something like that.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your lessons that you've learned at his lotus feet. There's so much to... It's incredible how many people we talk to at Radio Sai or we read about. And everybody brings our attention to the fact that Swami's love can never be captured in words.
That's right.
There are not enough tongues. Everyone's experience is so unique. And how can one individual be... make so many millions feel so special.
Yeah. That's it.
Most of us can't manage a family of two or three without, discord and politics and problems. And Swami managed millions of us with such tenderness.
I think sometimes calling him God takes us off the hook because we don't know what God is.
Mm.
But for me, it was a phenomenon.
Yes.
Just at as a human level to watch, that was a phenomenon.
I agree completely. Well, thank you so very
thank
much
you
for your time, and I hope we'll get an opportunity to engage with you one more time, perhaps in the future.
Like I said, he decides. Whenever it happens, it'll happen.
Yes. Sure.
Thank you. Sai Ram, everyone.
Sai Ram. Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. Today is the 29th of September, 2016, and the time in Prashanthi Nilayam right now is 42 minutes past 10 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. You just heard an episode of Learning with Love with Mr. Gopal Rao of Mumbai. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. We look forward to your feedback by email. As always, you can reach us at listener@radiosai.org. Please feel free to share your comments, suggestions and thoughts about this interview or any other Radio Sai programs at this email ID. I'll repeat it for you, listener@radiosai.org. With that, dear listeners, this is a gentle reminder to all of you that from Saturday, October the 1st, the holy days of Navratri begin, and Bhagwan Baba has taught us that the hands that serve are holier than the lips that pray. So all over India, the Cleanliness to Godliness campaign will kick off from October the 2nd. In total, 8 lakh volunteers, that is 800,000 Satya Sai volunteers will work hands-on continuously for 18 days till the 20th of October, which is Avatar Declaration Day, in 20 states of India, cleaning this country as part of their personal sadhana and in response to Prime Minister Modi's invite to the Sai community to join hands with his Swachh Bharat or Clean India campaign, and also in response to our beloved Lord Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba's call for responsible citizenship. Meanwhile, while the 800,000 volunteers are cleaning India and joining the Prime Minister's campaign in a very concerted manner and disciplined and dedicated manner for 18 continuous days, here in Prashanti, Gram Seva will begin by the students of the Satya Sai schools and Satya Sai University's 4 campuses right here in Prashanti during the Navratri period, which begins on 1st of October. Since the year 2000, Sri Satya Sai Gram Seva project has been undertaken by all the students and all the staff of all educational institutions that are run by the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. Gram Seva, also known as Village Welfare Service, is in fact an integral part of the Satya Sai School of System of Education. Its main objectives are, and I'm happy to share them with you, sensitizing students to social development problems of the underprivileged, especially in rural India, experiencing the joy associated with serving the poor and the needy even in a small way, and finally, acquainting students with group dynamics, team building, and optimum resource and time management. The uniqueness of this program lies in the students serving with love and humility each and every person in the village at that person's doorstep, irrespective of their social, economic, or religious status. The students go to every home and serve food packets with laddu sweets to each and every member of the family, and they also gift a pair of dhoti and a sari, those are clothes, to the head of the household. The homeless are also served with the same dignity wherever they are in each village. This service covers, can you ever believe this, 153 villages and hamlets of Puttaparthi, Bukkapatnam and neighboring Kothacheruvu mandals of the Anantapur district, bringing our Sai students in contact with a population of nearly 3 lakh people, that is 300,000 people. Before the actual door-to-door distribution begins, Sai students go around the village chanting shlokas from the Vedas and singing bhajans. This helps them to familiarize themselves with the topography of the village so that they do not miss serving any house. For example, last year, the Gram Seva project was conducted during the month of October during Navratri for 9 days, from 6th of October to 14th of October. And a total of a whopping 2,85,250. That is, my God, 2,85,250 food packets and laddus were distributed, as were nearly 50,000, actually 47,000 dhotis and saris. So because the dhotis and saris are given only to the head of the family, dhoti is a garment worn by Indian gentlemen and sari is the dress that we Indian women wear, nearly 2,000 students, faculty members, staff and others participated in the program last year. Now with that update about all that is happening all over India, and I already told you about the Satyasai International Organization's campaign for the Avatar Declaration Day, which is Love for Animals this year, and the Swachh Bharat campaign that we are joining hands with. Our campaign is called Cleanliness is Godliness, as Baba has taught us, because all service acts according to Swami are for self-transformation, and the Sai organization has got such a formidable reputation for being a very disciplined and dedicated and organized and systematic core of volunteers, and we're not a small number, we're a huge number to reckon with in India. 800,000 of us will be joining hands with the Prime Minister's campaign to clean our country continuously for 18 days, starting from Mahatma Gandhi's birthday on October 2nd, going all the way to the Avatar Declaration Day. Not to forget, a reminder to all the alumni, women alumni of Satya Sai schools in Prashanthi Nilayam and of Anantapur College of the Sai University, that a reunion of the Daughters of Sai is taking place on Avatar Declaration Day in Prashanthi Nilayam, and all are urged to register themselves for this event and join the celebrations from the 19th of October onwards. With that, it's time to sign off for me, but I would like to leave you with the wonderful concert of Miss Aruna Sairam. She is an accomplished musician, and she presented this bouquet of songs in the Divine Presence in Prashanthi Nilayam when the Mahasannidhi was unveiled in 2011 on the day of Guru Purnima. So, dear sisters and brothers, it's time for a bliss break. Enjoy it, please. Until next Thursday, please be well. Keep seeking and stay inspired. Jai Sai Ram.
Gurur Brahma Gurur Vishnu Gurur Devo Gurur Deva. Parabrahma Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Gurave Namaha. Namaha Guru Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jaya Shambho Vibho. Jaya Shambho Vibho Rudra Swayambho. Jaya Shankara Jaya Shana Jaya Sarvajna Kamadaha. Jaya Shambho Vibho Rudra Swayambho. Jaya Shankara Jaya Shana Jaya Sarvajna Kamadaga. Bho Shambho Shiva Shambho Swayambho. Bho Shambho Shiva Shambho Swayambho. Bho Shambho Swayambho. Bho Shambho Shiva 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 Shambho. Yeah.
Jala jala da da.
Jagadambe, bhakta janavar.